Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about reality dating shows like The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome to Love to See It, a podcast about weddings on farms, farmers who want to have weddings, and reality stars who hop between franchises.
Today, we'll be checking in on two of our faves, growing faves, honestly, Lovers and Liars and Farmer Wants a Wife, as well as discussing what I really consider to be the royal wedding of Bachelor Nation, Nick Viall's wedding to Natalie Joy. Before we get into all of that, just wanted to remind everyone that we are putting out bonus podcasts over on our Substack, Rich Text. And recently, we got real deep on Taylor Swift's new album, The Tortured Poets Department, and we had the wonderful culture critic B.D. McClay join us and lend us her real Swiftian expertise. You can find that episode at clareandemma.substack.com.
Let's get into it. I'm really excited to hear about this wedding firsthand because we did have a correspondent on the scene for this wedding. Emma, tell us about it.
It was a really fun weekend. For those who have been listening to this podcast since the beginning, you probably know that Claire and I met Nick in 2015 when he was like fresh off of Caitlyn's season.
Yeah.
I think, right?
Yeah.
I think it was right after. So we've known him for almost a decade now.
Oh my God.
And I know. Time really flies. Also, it means we've been doing this podcast for 9 years.
I remember when he was like, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. What do you guys think as podcasting experts? And now he has like the biggest podcast in the entire Bachelor Nation world.
I do want to say that I think I could be wrong, but I think Here to Make Friends might have been the first podcast he ever did.
Yeah.
So
you're welcome or I'm sorry, depending on how you feel about that. But yeah, so it was a big deal for him to finally get married after the long journey we've all seen him, you know, going through.
Yes, both finding publicly love. And personally.
Exactly.
He and Natalie are just very, very much in love. The wedding weekend all took place on Natalie's like family farm, which was just outside of Savannah, Georgia. I had never been to Savannah before. It was really a treat that Adam and I got to go to a new city for this wedding.
I love Savannah. That's so nice.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. I learned that I am obsessed with oak trees with Spanish moss on them.
Yes.
And it was like very peak Savannah weather, like gorgeous 70s, sunny, like wandering around all the public squares there, eating good food. Honestly, I wish we would have had a little bit more time. But it was just really fun to be there. And night one was the welcome drinks. It was like country chic themed. I was very stressed out
I know.
About what
we
to
had many
wear.
Conversations. Like, what does country chic mean? But I think you nailed it.
And they were specific, like lean in, you know, boots, hats. We were all encouraged to lean into that. And I will say I was nervous, but then like I forgot that almost everyone there on the friend's side, like obviously the family, there was Natalie's family, a lot of Natalie's family is from Georgia, but most people who were flying in for the wedding were like from the coasts and do not naturally wear cowboy hats. So we all were just like having fun. Like everyone was just like, this is like an elevated costume party and I'm going to have a good time. And it was really great. There was like a mechanical bull and a really cute bar.
Did you ride the bull?
I did not because I'm an extremely anxious person. I was like, I cannot absolutely embarrass myself in front of all these people that I have to see again tomorrow.
I know that I'm getting old because my first thought would be like, I will severely injure my neck. on this if I go on Mechanical
I did
Ball.
Watch Nick's dad go. Oh, so I was like, it was like on like a bounce house, basically. It was a gentler ball, but people were still getting thrown off. I was like, I don't have good balance as it is.
Yeah.
So this is, I really respect it for other people. My friend Alexa did it and truly killed it. And I was like, couldn't be me.
Definitely not.
I don't like to do things that I'm bad at.
2 feet on the ground, publicly. Please.
So exactly.
Did you see any Bachelor Nation celebrities riding the bull or not riding on the bull, but just there?
There were quite a few Bachelor Nation guests. I was staying at the same hotel as our dear friends, Charlene and Andy of Dear Shandy, who were also officiating the wedding.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So we were at the same hotel, and then Ashley and Jared were also there, and Serena and Joe were there as well. And Jason Alabaster was there both nights. Genevieve of Paradise.
Interesting.
And Clayton season. Yeah. And then
sort
Victoria.
Sort of slightly random.
Yeah, I think that she and Natalie are quite close.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I was like, of all the people that Nick has met in Bachelor Nation, this is quite an assortment.
No, it was definitely, you know, some people that Nick has been super close with, some that Natalie, and obviously they share a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Victoria Fuller, for example, was one of Natalie's bridesmaids. They're like best friends. So she was there. Natasha Parker, Chris Soules, and Ben Higgins were not there for the welcome party, but they were all there for the wedding. And I really appreciated that Chris Soules showed up to the wedding where no one was wearing a cowboy hat in a cowboy hat, because he is genuinely, authentically country chic, unlike the rest of
us. He's like, what other kind of chic is there?
Yeah, I was just like thinking, like I was observing him from afar, and I was like, this man truly belongs on Farmer Wants a Wife. Like, this was a show built for
him. The minute
that
we learned about the existence of Farmer Wants a Wife, we're like, oh, this is what Chris Soules should have been on. That there was a huge mistake. There was some sort of category error. The files got mixed up. So it's good to see that he's back on a farm in his formal wear.
Exactly. He fit in. And it was nice to see him. Ben Higgins, lovely, very funny. And everyone was just really, really sweet. I had met Jason before at Nick's book party, and he's just like an absolute delight of a human. Aww. Had a nice time hanging out with him. And of course, our friends, Charlene and Andy, and Jared is someone that we had on the pod early on and have met a couple times. So it was nice to see him as well. Everyone, and Natasha. It was just, everyone was very sweet. There were also some non-Bachelor reality TV guests that felt notable. JoJo Siwa and her girlfriend were there for the wedding, not the welcome drinks, but the wedding. They were in like coordinated outfits. JoJo was wearing a really nicely tailored suit with like a hot pink accent, and her
so
girlfriend
was
in. So
she wasn't in her Kiss
new
style
new look.
Metal
no.
look. Okay, good.
No, it was black tie wedding appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a black tie wedding.
So it's just a persona. That's good.
Yeah. And her girlfriend was like perfectly matched to her in like that same hot pink accent color, but in a silky dress. And they were just like dancing, the two of them, the whole night.
I saw Katie Maloney was there from Vanderpump Rules.
Yes. Obviously, you know, that was an exciting sighting for me personally, as a longtime VPR watcher. She was there with Dana, who's her podcast co-host. Their podcast is like under Nick's podcasting media company.
Yeah.
And Dana was also on Vanderpump Rules for one season, season 8. So they were there together, and they had like a handful of friends. Like, there were a lot of like fairly high profile influencers there, and a lot of them who are based in LA like know each other. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who else was notable? Jenny JWoww from Jersey Shore was there with her fiance, Zach.
Interesting.
She was extremely sweet. Adam and I actually ended up hanging out with the two of them for quite a while. And they were hilarious and so kind.
I love that. They need to come on the show. I want to hear their takes.
I know. She was actually talking about kind of her journey, like becoming visible so young. And it was just, it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Zach, her fiance, is a pro wrestler. but now he's on the reboot of Jersey Shore. And he was talking about like the difference between filming that kind of housewives style reality show versus like the WWE.
Right.
Where you're just like playing directly to the camera.
Right. Yeah. There's similar like scripted, unscripted reality, but they're
but he's like, big differences.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I really had to adjust because they were like, no, you can't look at us.
Right.
You gotta just live your life.
You're supposed to pretend the cameras aren't here. You're not only pretending this is all real, you're also pretending you can't see the cameras now.
Yeah. But they were just like extremely friendly and warm. And that made me really happy. I think there was also, I didn't watch Special Forces, but one of the like Special Forces guys who was training them was there.
And that's where he met JoJo also, right?
Yes, that's where he met JoJo. And that guy did make a little joke about Tom Sandoval at the welcome party in his speech.
Yeah, I was like, why isn't Tom Sandoval there? They met during Special Forces.
And yeah, then I don't think
he went
close
on the bio files and it went badly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Were any Bachelor producers there?
Yes, there were, I think, three, like, mostly, I think most of them were former producers, one current producer. I did get a little bit of, I wouldn't even call this tea, but, like, a fun little preview. I did learn that they are in the midst or were in the midst of filming Jen's hometown dates, so they're pretty far along in her season, and apparently our gal is doing really well. She's like really leaning in and
I love
that. They said it's going to be a good season. I know. I'm happy. We're really rooting for Jen. The other thing I learned is that yes, Golden Bachelorette definitely happening.
Yay.
They are currently casting for the men. And I told that hopefully it's being announced soon. And I was not told who the lead is. So like, I cannot give a spoiler. But I don't even know because this producer was doing her job and was not going to tell me. But I did learn that the lead is someone that we're familiar with. So,
oh my God. So yeah, such abundance of great choices. So I'm very excited, whoever it is. Unless they choose like, they pick someone and I'm like, oh, actually, that was the one person I didn't want. But I feel like I would be happy with pretty much anyone I can think of. So many great options from
this
season.
I agree. I'm just so excited. But yeah, the wedding was really lovely. I also want to shout out to Charlene and Andy, who did such an incredible job officiating the ceremony. They worked really hard on it and it was so good. They were funny. They were heartfelt. There were like some little like jabbing jokes all that showed really just like how well they know Nick and now Natalie. And it was just, it was really, really sweet. And Nick and Natalie's vows also legitimately made me cry. Like,
aww.
Yeah, they were just very, very well written, very heartfelt. And yeah, you know, love is cool, guys.
I love love. And I can imagine that Charlene and Andy would be great officiants because I love listening to them talk about on their podcast.
I'm like, they have great insights. Mm-hmm. They've known Nick for so long and met Natalie very early on in their relationship. And also just, yeah, look, podcasters, we make great officiants and public speakers.
Yeah, I actually gave a toast at a wedding this weekend and no one who is a Bachelor Nation celebrity was there, so I'm not going to talk about it. But I was like, you know what? Podcasting, it really lets you hone those public speaking skills.
Yeah, it's
like, thank God
you
for podcasting.
What we're saying is podcasting is a public good.
Podcasting is the new Toastmasters. Like, start a podcast, you won't regret it. Well, congrats to Nick and Natalie. We're so happy for them. We just love weddings, we love romance, we love love. And I also loved seeing all the pictures of them with their daughter who was there. She is so cute. And I also love babies.
So cute.
So, you know,
yeah,
love weddings, babies. Very, very traditional, but I love them.
It was very cute. Natalie carried her down the aisle at the beginning and then handed her off to her mom. Yeah.
Aww.
And then walked the rest of the way. It was very, very sweet. And River being so little, she was just kind of like asleep the whole time.
Yeah, that's actually the perfect time.
Yeah.
Yeah, to take her to a wedding. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to be there to celebrate them and also to carry all of this insight back to us. So thank you. Should we touch on some smaller items that have been going on? There wasn't a lot of gossip this week, but there were one or two things we wanted to mention. Greg Grippo went on Jason Tardik's podcast, Trading Secrets, and he talked a little bit about his breakup with Victoria. And I think that like he did a really good job kind of giving a little bit of a tidbit about how things went wrong while still coming off really well and like also not throwing her under
respectful.
The bus. It was respectful. And he talked just about how hard it is, like being in a public relationship. He said, if things aren't working out, it sucks even more. It's sad, to be honest with you. It's like really sad. And he said he just wanted to respect her and not go into detail on anything. But he also talked about how that the backlash that I think we all remember the last time their relationship was really public was when they had just gotten together. She had just broken up with Johnny DeFilippo, who she met on Bachelor in Paradise. And there was a ton of criticism and backlash coming toward her about the end of that relationship and the start of her relationship with Greg. And he said, you know, it was really hard to watch her go through that, but that it made them very close to go through that together. And so it's nice to see that they are still, at least from his perspective, like on good terms and supportive, even though that relationship has ended, because it can be really hard.
That's really nice.
And like you can form that kind of trauma bond with someone you're in a relationship with when you're going through that period together and in the public eye.
And it just sounds, I always just feel such empathy for anyone who is navigating addressing a breakup and in any sort of relationship in the public eye. It seems really hard and it seems like it puts so much stress on a relationship. And I just feel like it's really hard to withstand that kind of speculation. And so I'm glad that both of them have remained so kind of above the fray and like respectful of each other. That is, that is really the best way to handle this kind of thing.
And like we said, really great job kind of slow, soft launching the breakup so that it wasn't too much of like a splashy gossip item. Speaking of splashy gossip items and breakups that were not soft launched or slow rolled, there was one little update that I saw on the Golden Divorce drama, which is that Gary's daughter Angie posted an Instagram kind of reacting to the strong audience conversation backlash.
Conversation is putting it so nicely.
Let's say backlash to the news of the Golden Divorce. And I mean, I'm going to cop to this. I was a little shocked by the speed of the Golden Divorce and the way that it seemed like some things hadn't really been thought through to get married and to do it, you know, on TV for a paycheck, all these things. Like, that bugged me a little bit. There was some critiques I had, some questions I had. And Angie's like, how dare you?
We always know that people take a critique that is valid and go to like turn it up 1,000 times into a place of just deranged harassment and hatred.
I mean, if they got married purely cold-heartedly just for money, even that is not really that big of a crime at the end of the day. You know, like, let's all calm down. She wrote in her caption, "I love how invested people were in the show. What an experience to have you along for the ride. What has been disheartening is the level of rage and cruelty that our family has been met with. My dad and Teresa are kind, good people that made this decision for them. No one else."
I mean, I'm sure like his kids are getting harassed and his granddaughters are getting harassed. Like, internet anger always just goes to a really dark place, and it's very depressing because as people that want space to be like critical of decisions made in public, which I think is valid, then you're like, wait, am I fueling some sort of like, just cruelty? Am I just bullying? Am I fueling online bullying of these people that got married and divorced? Like, I don't...
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, we obviously don't want anyone to be bullied. And, you know, it's tough. Like, divorces is clearly not what they wanted to happen. And and they made the decision with their own best interests at heart, and that's the right thing to do. And so we wish them the best. Had some questions about how it all went down, but ultimately we wish them the best and we move on. Please leave this family alone.
Yeah, we're done. Leave them alone.
Measured critiques only.
So Daisy Kent went on a podcast, Danny Austin's De-Influenced, and she confirmed that she is dating someone and no longer single, but she has not divulged any details. I think previously she had said she was like dating. So she's been kind of rolling out.
She was being like a little coy, like, yeah, maybe there's someone, but now she's like, yeah, I'm not single anymore.
Now I'm like, is this the reason that she is not the bachelor?
I know. I was like, the timeline is interesting to me because technically it seems like this could have started around the time that the show started. But if she's being cautious and slow rolling it, I would guess that she's been seeing this person since earlier. So I don't know. Maybe that played a role in her decision. In other Bachelor Nation dating news, do you remember when Andrew Spencer was dating Becca Michie? Like, he hard launched their relationship and then last summer, and then it seemed like they just never spoke about it again. It was like never posted about. He finally confirmed on the record earlier this month that they broke up. He posted about being single. And I read that in a recent Instagram Q&A, he said that distance was a big factor. He didn't want to leave Chicago. They were in New York City. I mean,
a normal reason to break up.
I mean, apparently everyone's breaking up for that reason these days. Gary, look, if you
don't want to move, you don't want to move.
Yeah. It was better when we all just had to date people in our hometown, you know? It kept
This is what Love is Blind gets right.
Yeah.
They get so much wrong, but this is what they get right. Just exactly. Do it regionally. More Bachelor dating news. Jason Tardik and Kat Stickler, TikToker Kat Stickler, now, of course, a confirmed couple, attended Stagecoach together.
Mm.
Good for them. They're living it up. And we know when you go to Stagecoach together, that's true love. That's why Joey and Kelsey were also at Stagecoach together.
Yeah. That's
in coordinated country-ish outfits.
Yeah, the thing about Stagecoach is I'm like, what gossip is going to come out about Stagecoach in like a month? But we'll see.
I was like, wow, bold of Nick to be like, choose Stagecoach or my wedding.
Yeah.
That's dedication.
I know. We'll never know who could have been at that wedding if not for Stagecoach. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back to talk about Lovers and Liars. And after that, of course, we'll be getting into Farmer Wants a Wife and ending with our final rose. Can you keep up? I like
love it. And we are back, and it is time to talk about the last couple episodes of Lovers and Liars, also known as F-Girl Island in my heart, and initially on the show as well.
And also, it's all about F-Girls, so I think we can call it F-Girl Island if we want.
I agree. I think we're allowed. I think Yolan would support us doing that. So a lot happened in these couple episodes, but I feel like there were a couple standout things that I wanted to discuss. First, we need to discuss Camille, who is quickly becoming one of the main characters, and I think fire starters, controversial figures on this season. We learned that she was on Below Deck previously and was also in a ton of conflict on that show.
Yeah. And apparently she was on like American Idol once. She's clearly just like one of those serial reality TV show hopping. Yeah,
she's a career
personalities.
She is a lifer.
Yeah, but she was a big deal on Below Deck. I've never watched Below Deck, so when I read the summaries of what the drama are, it feels like I'm watching something written in another language, or it's been like,
you're like, what is a stew?
Or it was written by ChatGPT or something. I'm like, there's like interiors and exteriors and stews, and what is a stew? A steward?
Yeah, it's someone who works like in the cabin.
Okay. Yeah, I was very confused by everything that I tried to read about this, but she seems to have been quite controversial.
Yeah, from what I read, she got fired by Captain Sandy during the run of her season and repeatedly clashed with another Stew, Alyssa. And Alyssa, who is Black, later went on Instagram and accused Camille of being racist. So yikes. Don't love that.
Yikes. Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I'm like super shocked by any of that, given what we've seen from Camille on Lovers and Liars so far.
I was like, yeah, that seems in line with my impression of her on this show.
She was also apparently in what they call a boat manse with someone else from the show, but then it ended fairly quickly after she left the show and he like accused her of cheating on him.
Yes.
Within like a week.
I did see that as well. Yeah, so. Like he was defending her when the show was airing and then basically right after she broke up with him.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, she wasn't faithful. So there's that. I don't, again, watch Below Deck and it has bitten me in the ass because I watched 3 entire episodes of Lovers and Liars, not realizing that I was dealing with like a seasoned reality TV veteran.
I know, and it really makes sense because she gets into the mix, she gets into conflict, she's a major player for Casey's heart. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, this girl is gonna be in final 3.
Yeah, this show is such a great option for previous reality TV people because it's kind of okay that it's clear that they're there for professional reasons, right?
Yeah, they're like, we all agree. We're all professionals.
It's
here.
Like if you're on The Bachelor and you were already on Below Deck, it would be like, oh, so you're just here because you're a professional reality star.
Such a bad look.
That's fine on Lovers and Liars / F Girl Island. So let's talk about what Casey's getting up to. She gets the first date of episode number 2 with Casey, I guess the first date of the season, right? Because episode 1, they don't have dates. And he can so tell she's an F-girl from the very beginning. He's like, I like F-girls. They're fun. They're spicy. I just like them. So I'm going to hang out with Camille. And she's wearing this Clueless style, like blue Argyle cord that I'm obsessed with and I could never pull off, but she looks amazing in it. And they have this conversation where he's trying to open up to her and she's just clearly not paying any attention at all. Like he's telling her how he came back on the show and really opened up to Tamaris, but then it turned out she was an F girl and she kind of screwed him over. And Camille's like, yeah, you weren't really into her at all.
And he's like, what?
It's like, that's the opposite of what he was saying. But it doesn't matter. She's just like devouring him with her eyes and ignoring his words. Yeah.
Casey is just like, she's really, really beautiful. And I like that.
She's beautiful. She's got like spunk. You know, he likes someone with some like interest.
He likes a woman with an overpowering personality as compared to his own.
Yes. There's even a funny moment where back at the house, one of the other girls we learn knows him a little bit from high school. And they're like, what? Tell us about Casey. Like, what's the dirt? And she's like, oh, he's really goofy and he loves girls with a big personality. And I'm like, yeah, those are the two things that everyone knows about Casey. Thank you for your expert
insight. That is not an inside scoop.
And then Camille confesses to the camera that she hasn't really had a real date in a long time. She's like, I've gone on dates with like rich men, but nothing that was real. And then she says, I love love, but I live in Fort Lauderdale, which is iconic.
Frankly,
she's like, you can't fall in love in Fort Lauderdale. That's just not an option.
You know what? She might be right.
I get it. She's like Louise from St. Louis in the Sex and the City movie. She's like, I had to move to another location to fall in love. New York, F Girl Island, whatever it takes.
I too would not want to date in Fort Lauderdale. So this is the one moment I have empathy for Camille.
That's why they're all here, because they cut back to the house and I realized that Michi is also from Fort Lauderdale.
See, you can't find love in Fort Lauderdale. And cue us getting like 10 messages from people that are like, I met my husband in Fort Lauderdale.
And you guys are real and you are valid and I support you. Also, I was wondering if that was related to why Camille and Michi hate each other. Like, I was like, is there previous beef? Are they like the two hottest girls in Fort Lauderdale? Like, it's so easy to edit that kind of thing out. You know what I mean? If they decided not to make that a storyline, for them to be like, oh, yeah, I always see her at like parties or bars, or like we did bottle service together or something.
I hope there's a juicy backstory.
Me
like
too.
These two hotties have been circling each other from afar and now they leave Fort Lauderdale and find themselves face to face on the island.
Yeah.
Battling it out for Casey's money.
Exactly. And then they kiss. The end. Also, I'm obsessed with Michi's hair bows. I don't know another place to bring this
she's
up.
She's my fave. I just love her.
She's bringing this like edgy, girly sort of vibe that works for me. And again, I would definitely pick her and she would take all my money. But Camille is taking things a little bit far. Like, he already is pretty sure she's an F girl. So she kind of should be leaning into seeming sweeter than he expects. But she's not doing that. And
she's actually doing the opposite of that. She's like, how dare you have a conversation with anyone else? And in fact, it's offensive if you want to speak to another woman at all, even if she's your friend.
Yeah, yeah, there is a moment. So, spoiler alert, someone who was previously on F-Boy Island comes in episode 3, Mia. And Casey was on that season, because when is he ever not on this show? And he's like, oh my God, that's my friend Mia. So he passes by Camille at a mixer and is like, hey, I'm just going to go grab my friend Mia and like then later let's talk. And she's like, oh my God, that's so annoying that you'll just like come up to me and be like, hey, I'm going to go talk to someone else. Like, why would you even do that? Like, why would you even come talk to me just to be like, I'm going to talk to another girl? And he's literally like, that's like what? My friend. I was like, should I just ignore her? That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just like was saying hi and I'm going to go talk to my friend quickly. And she is pissed.
Oh, actively, very
extremely pissed. And it is giving mind game. Like, it does seem like she is kind of trying to control his behavior toward other women.
Yes.
In a way that
I really did not like it. And I was like, Casey, come on, do not pick this girl.
Yeah. And it does leave a bad taste in his mouth. He's already pretty sure she's an F girl. But after this, he's like, F girl. Like, that's F girl behavior. Spoiler, he does not send her home. No, despite being sure really that she's an F girl. But the next day he does ask a different girl, Sabrina, on his second date, because she's more against type. She's more sweet. She's calm. She's like, she's my calm in a storm. And maybe that's what I need.
And she even refers to herself. She's like, you know, I'm not part of the Casey fan club. Like, there's a very vocal group of women who are like, Casey, Casey, Casey. And she's just more of a sit back, observe, go in, have a little makeout sesh with Casey.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting way to play it.
Yeah, she doesn't pop as having like a big personality in the same way that someone like Camille or Michi does. Like, the kind of girls that he usually seems to gravitate to. But it seems like when they do sit and talk, he enjoys it and they have a nice vibe together. And he's like, maybe I should be looking for that. He tells her like, oh, I think my next relationship is going to be it for me. And I'm like, Casey, no, you're going to be going on reality shows for years, getting in different 6 month long relationships.
You're 26.
Yeah, come on. Like,
come on.
I don't believe you. And neither does anyone else on the show, which is a big running thread, is that no one believes that Casey is really reformed.
No, and also they're like, well, yeah, this is why I don't feel bad going, like, gunning for the 100K.
Yeah. Also, after this run-in at the mixer, Casey is turned off, and Camille is also pissed. So she does, like, a drunken confessional and tells the camera that Casey is an idiot because, quote, he knows he's hot, he uses it to his advantage, and he thinks a girl like me wouldn't notice, and I do. I'm smart. If you're really here for the right reasons, you need to start acting like it. And I was like, why? Camille, it sounds like you're talking about yourself. Like, projection, Batman.
Also, why would it take someone of, like, greater than average intelligence to be like, that guy knows he's hot? Literally the most obvious thing about him.
He's like, I know I'm hot, but only really smart girls can tell that I know that. Well, she was drunk, to be fair.
To be fair, I also think I have like really profound thoughts when I've had a few tequila shots.
I really was just struck by how exactly it sounded like she was describing her own behavior, which is like, I'm hot, I use it to my advantage and I don't think that he's going to notice. But yeah, he's noticing. So reel it in. But she does apologize the next day and that kind of smooths things over. He goes into the next mixer and is like, I hope she apologizes. And she does. And I'm like, no, don't give her the opportunity to talk you around. That's what an F girl would do, is talk you around the next day and save herself.
But also producers are not letting Camille leave.
Yeah, of course
not. She's basically the center of all drama. Speaking of that, let's talk about a very odd fight that Camille and Anissa get into with Jaslyn, who is one of Benedict's like main pursuers. And they have a great connection.
Yeah, Camille and Anissa are just kind of like shit stirs.
They're giving mean girl.
Yeah, they're in this little clique. I think Shanaja is also part of this. But Camille and Anissa were the most vocal. And they're sitting out by the pool and they ask Jaslyn, like, do you think Benedict actually has like sex appeal? And she's like, yeah. And they're like, really? And she's like, no, I'm not joking. I do think he's sexy. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, he is ripped. He's handsome. He's funny. He was cast to be one of the leads in a dating show. So it's pretty clear that he is.
Also, he's been the runner-up twice.
Sort of cultural standard of sex.
Women like him.
Women like him. Why is this being treated like this absurd concept that someone would find him sexy?
It just feels so odd because I think it's less of like a weird thing, maybe as a throwaway comment. Like, I could see being like, I just don't get it. I don't get Benedict's sex appeal. But then the way they kept needling her is what made it really weird.
They were really pushing her buttons. Anissa starts saying, oh, I think Benedict has asexual vibes. She's like, you know, when someone's so funny, it overpowers their sexuality.
I was like, that is not...
I'm not familiar with this concept.
That also is not what asexuality is.
Well, this is the thing. She's like, I don't think that I think he's asexual because, like, I don't find him sexy. But Jaslyn, you find him sexy, so maybe he's not asexual. Like, what do you think asexuality is?
It's something that is determined by other people.
You can be completely repellent to every person who has ever met you, and that doesn't make you asexual. That's not what asexuality is. That is
correct.
Your own sexual identity of whether you feel sexual desires and urges and want to have sexual relationships. And I don't think that Anissa knows that.
She does not know that.
But also, I'm just like, famously, women find it sexy when men are funny. Like, that is one of the most well-known things about human sexuality.
Like, they seem to
Woody
just
Allen dated beautiful
shit.
Women when he was a famous comedian who was famously not sexy. Like, every famous comedian is constantly draped with hot women, even if they are not handsome. And they're like, oh my God, you know how when guys are so funny and then they're just not attractive to women anymore? No, that's not a thing. That just simply isn't a thing. You made that up.
It's just really weird thing to double down on and then triple down on and then get into a fight over.
Yeah. Well, Camille and Anissa start like mimicking how goofy they think he'd be in a romantic situation. And Jaslyn starts to get mad. She leaves. She's like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I do feel like they just picked a weird way to kind of push Jaslyn's buttons because she's a little reactive. She's clearly very attached to Benedict already and defensive of him.
She's extremely defensive of him in a way that feels not quite commensurate to the amount of time she's known him.
Which is like 20 hours.
Correct.
And so at the mixer that night, this comes to Benedict's attention in a really funny way, which is that Anissa and Camille are friends with this girl, Elizabeth, who is like a baby deer. She's so like awkward and shy and just like, what's happening? Wide-eyed. She sort of is like giving Karen from Mean Girls, where you're just like, she just doesn't seem with it in this way, but she is so
Poor girl.
Just wandering around with her mean girl clique being like, what's happening? Where am I?
Help me. Help me. Talk to a man.
And she's like, let's all go talk to Benedict together because I basically don't want to go by myself. And So she brings the absolute two worst possible people to bring for moral support to go talk to Benedict. And they go over together. Benedict describes this as being jumped by the Powerpuff Girls.
It's a great visual.
And they talk to him all in a group for a little bit. And then Jaslyn interrupts and immediately sits down and reports the whole shit-talking situation to Benedict. She's like, they said that you were asexual. Actually, get them back over here. I'm going to confront them with this in front of Benedict. So poor Benedict is sitting there while one of his ladies is being like, you said that Benedict was not attractive and you agreed and you said that he was asexual. You guys were being really mean about how unattractive he was. And Benedict is like, I wish to be dead. Like,
Benedict is like, am I getting sent home tonight? At one point, he's like, I guess, can they vote me out?
He's like, I'd love to be getting sent home tonight. Yeah. I don't want to be here anymore. And the awkward thing here is that Elizabeth actually, as far as we can see, didn't talk shit about Benedict.
She seems genuinely into him. Like, she's not very good at wooing him, but I don't think she was talking shit about him because she is attracted to him.
Yeah. And
poor Elizabeth keeps being like, I actually didn't say that. I actually didn't say it.
Yeah, I'm not the one who said that. I don't know why I'm involved with this. But because she is part of the group that Jaslyn confronts him with, it comes to seem that it's about her as well. And later, they all sit down separate from Benedict, all the women. And Elizabeth is like, I just want to clarify that, like, I got lumped in, but I did not actually say that he was asexual. And Jaslyn is like, relax. I definitely said it was Anissa and Camille. Babe, no one was being relaxed. Everyone is being extremely not relaxed and not chill in this conversation. But Benedict thanks Jaslyn for bringing this to his attention. But I was like, this seems like a bad move. I wouldn't want to use my time to make him feel shitty. And then he would associate me with that shitty feeling.
It's giving narking on The Bachelor.
Right. It's like, that classic moment where you're like, I'm going to show how here for him I am. But instead, I'm using my time to make him think about other women who think he sucks. And he's going to only attach those things to me and not our actual relationship. But unlike on The Bachelor, it works.
I know.
Which fascinated me.
I guess it's also a little bit different because Benedict is not dating Anissa and Camille. So he's like... Yeah.
He's not attached to them.
Yeah, he's not attached to them in the same way.
And I think also maybe because an explicit part of the show is rooting out the F-girls, maybe it felt more appropriate to be like, I'm warning you about the women. We all know there are women here to fuck with you. I'm telling you who they are. That's part of the format of the show. It's not just me coming up with some bullshit to distract you with. Maybe he's like, thank you for having my back. Like, let's go on a date. And so interesting that worked as the move. I wonder if we'll see more of that happening. If it's a move that works, that you can just spend your time like feeding names, these women.
It did seem like Elizabeth might try this in the next episode, try to do some narking, which I'm sure is going to go really well for her because everything seems to go great for Elizabeth.
Yeah. Oh, Elizabeth, I relate to Elizabeth just in the sense that like when you have such a low like social EQ, you're like, you can go into an interaction being like, I'm just going to do this thing that I see other people do and it goes fine. And then you get into the situation, you're like, oh no, there are so many smaller decisions and choices that I have to make to navigate this that I actually am not prepared to make any of them. And I'm getting drowned in all of these decisions. I'm making all the wrong choices. And now this is an awkward situation and I have to leave. I have to leave this place and never come back. That's every interaction she has.
It is. And this vibe carries right over to episode 3. She just walks herself right into conflict again, like a true,
so hard to watch.
Truly unforced error. She's trying to pull Benedict for time with him and failing just repeatedly because she's not very aggressive about it and also actively making out with Jan Danielle. And
he's making out with Jan Danielle.
Oh, yes. Sorry. He is. Not Elizabeth. And Benedict picks Jan Danielle up and like whisks her away just as Elizabeth is finally going over there to grab him. And so she just kind of left awkwardly flailing to sit on the couch.
It's one of these moments where I'm like, this is what I would do. I would be like, oh, should I, where should I go? Like indecisive, awkward.
Claire, that's why we know better than to go on a dating show.
We're not cut out for this. But watching from afar, I can say, oh, Elizabeth, in this moment, you should have just been like, oh, well, I'm going to wait here. When you're done whisking her away, you can come whisk me away over here or something like that. And then you sit and you wait confidently and firmly. And instead she like freaks out and is like, oh my God, now I'm alone here. What should I do? I don't have a phone to look at. Kim, come sit with me. She like flags down the nearest woman walking by to come sit with her because she can't be alone for 30 seconds. And Kim, who is this new woman who just came in episode 3, comes and sits with her, and immediately Benedict comes back. Clearly being like, oh, Elizabeth was coming out to get time with me. I'm going to go back and talk to her. But Kim
then,
is there.
Of course, Elizabeth can't just be like, Kim, now you have to leave. I called you over. She sort of tries, but it gets quickly very awkward. Yeah. And then she kind of out of nowhere is like, Kim, what are you going to say to CJ, who is your first choice?
Yeah.
And Kim just looks her dead in the eye and is like, where did that come from? I never said that.
Yeah. There was this awkward moment, too, where I was like, did Kim ever say that? Or is she saying that because Kim is Black and CJ is Black? Or is she saying it just because she would say anything to get Kim to leave?
I really couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I really could not tell. And I had all of those thoughts. It made me very uncomfortable. And Kim is just pissed because she knows that saying that in front of Benedict is going to really ruin her chances with him.
Yeah.
Like, and she's like, why are you being messy? And then Elizabeth does the like white girl baby deer thing and is like,
I'm not being messy. I don't know what you mean. But it was, she so clearly was intentionally saying that to get Kim to leave. So you can't, or at least to like make it clear that Kim is not competition, that like Elizabeth is the one who's here for Benedict and Kim can either leave or she can have it made clear that she is not an option for Benedict. And that's messy. Like, it might be because you just wanted that time alone with Benedict, but that doesn't mean that you're in, you know, that you're entitled to do whatever to get it.
Right. Whether she meant to be or not, she is in fact being messy.
Yeah. She just panics. She panics and like she does dumb shit to get out of the corner that she's in. And she threw Kim under the bus to get that time alone with Benedict. And then she's surprised that it comes back on her. She's like, I should just get to say that and there are no consequences.
And like, Kim doesn't fuck around. Kim is like to the camera, I am gunning for her now.
Which like, fair. And then she finally leaves because now it's awkward. She's like, all right, 5 minutes. You can have 5 minutes with Benedict. And Elizabeth immediately just starts talking about how her first boyfriend in high school got insecure because people were always like, how did you land a girl like her?
It was so
like, Claire, first of all, it's like she is like nagging her ex and like humble bragging about herself and also like rehashing a previous relationship. Like, none of these are flattering things to present to a guy.
It's so bad. It's so bad. She keeps just talking about exes and how she had XYZ complaints about them. Yeah. And at one point, Benedict is like, maybe you should tell him that. Yeah. And she does not get it. She does not get it at all.
He's like, I like Elizabeth, but I never have any idea what she's talking about. Which, like, seems like Benedict, a problem. Like, what do you like
about
her? You
don't like Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm starting to think you don't like her. And so at this point, things are obviously going to continue escalating because Elizabeth now has to go back into the room where Kim is waiting and Kim is mad.
And Camille and Anissa, who love conflict, are also there and Elizabeth is part of their clique. So I was like, this is about to explode. And this just escalates into a way that like pulls in so many random women. It was astounding.
Yeah, everyone just starts yelling at each other, basically.
Yeah,
like, everyone's mad at Elizabeth because Elizabeth said this shit about Kim for a reason, but not for a good or fair reason. And they're like, you're trying to play innocent, like you're not stirring shit, like you're not causing trouble, but you are. And then she's like, oh, well, but everyone else was saying mean things about Sabrina by the pool earlier and saying she wasn't a girl's girl and she's going to snitch on people. And Sabrina's like, wait, what? And all the other women are like, don't deflect. We're talking about you right now. And suddenly they're all yelling.
They're all just absolutely screaming at each other. Nikki walks over at one point and is like, no. And just walks away.
She's like, I wonder if they're fighting or if they're playing a rousing game of Pictionary. Yeah, it gets very messy. And I was really just like, I can't believe that it was Elizabeth that did all of this. But I really can, because she just, like you said, just did that classic, like, innocent white girl thing of, like, bumbling into a scenario where she's leaving all this, like, wreckage. And then she's like, me? A nice girl. I don't like drama. I couldn't have caused this. Other people must have caused it. And I'm like, that worked last time because I actually didn't see you talk shit about Benedict. But this time I saw what happened and yeah, this was on you. Work.
And also in the preview for next week, she's clearly going to start narking on people. So yeah. she's already signed her own death certificate.
Like, she doesn't know how to navigate this situation. So she like starts out being so innocent that it gets her fucked up. And then she just like starts getting backed into corners and being like, oh, should I like lash out in some way? Should I throw her under the bus? She's not good at it. She's not good at negotiating these situations.
She's, in fact, very bad at it. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will finish up our conversation about lovers and liars and get into some things about the last two episodes of Farmer Wants a Wife, which I am actually so excited to talk about. Can you keep up? I like.
And we're back. We should talk about some of the F-girl hijinks of this couple episode batch of Lovers and Liars, because I've just been loving some of their work, where Elizabeth is like kind of causing chaos in this sort of like goobery, naive, you know, not wanting to take responsibility, but just flailing around way. Some of the F-girls are having fun and they're working at a higher level, and I'm enjoying that. Let's talk about blonde Brianna, who tries some moves and they really don't work, but I appreciate the efforts that she is making. she of the long blonde hair and the giant fake tits that she's very proud of. She pulls Benedict aside at a mixer in episode 2 to officially friend zone him.
And truly incredible power move. Which so good. Fully backfires on
yeah.
her.
You can't do that because he has so many other options. Like, it's not like much of a power move because you don't have any power. You can see him at the beginning of the conversation, like puffing himself up. He's like, oh, Brianna wants to talk to me. Like, ooh, we're flirting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, I'm great. So into Casey. And you see him like deflate. And then he tries to play it off. He doesn't want to seem further embarrass himself. Humiliated. He wants to seem like, oh, he kind of knew all along that that's what this is about and it's cool. So he's like, oh yeah, yeah, he's my boy. He's great. Like, I'll talk to him for you. Like, you're in the crew now. And like, they do like a handshake and he tells the camera, I think I might throw up.
Benedict is really taken on a lot.
Benedict is having such an interesting time because he's taking a lot during the mixers, but then the elimination ceremonies are just love fests for him, which we'll discuss. I find this really fascinating. But he is really upset by this. And I was like, what is Brianna doing? Like, I guess my thought was that she wanted it to come off as like, I'm sincerely interested in Casey and that's real. And that's the only reason that I would basically friend zone another guy.
She was trying to give, like, I'm not an F girl. Like, I'm just trying to, like, befriend you so that you put in a good word for me, like, with
right.
your boy.
Like, if I were an F girl, wouldn't I be trying to get with whatever guy would take me? But, like, I must be sincere because I'm befriending you because I have a sincere interest in someone else. And yet it comes across, I think, quite transparently that it's a power move. Like, it came across that way to me. It comes across that way to Benedict. And that comes off as a pickup artist move. Like, if a guy did that to me, I would be like, okay, so I see what's going on here.
And Benedict correctly IDs this, sends her home, and turns out she's right. She is an F girl.
Her exit is hilarious. This is the first moment when he gets some surprising love in an exit. She's like, I didn't go for you, Benedict, because you're a perfect angel. I could never steal the money from you. CJ, you seem boring as fuck. No offense. Casey, you are literally the biggest twerp I've ever met in my entire life. You're an F boy. I wanted to teach you a lesson. I think I could have if I'd had another couple of days. And Benedict, you deserve a nice girl. Bye. And I was like, what is going on with Benedict? Like, there are, I think, three F girls in this batch of episodes that we're talking about who go out of their way to be like, Benedict, I could never hurt you. I just thought you were such a genuine and good and lovely guy.
Benedict is ending up with some money. That was my takeaway.
Because he's getting rejected by so many women who then later, when they get eliminated, are like, I rejected you because I'm an F girl and I wanted to hurt a guy who sucks like Casey. I didn't want to hurt such a good guy like you who deserves love and happiness and $50,000. So he's like actually kind of winning. Like all of the suffering during the mixers is just...
It's going to pay off for him.
Yeah. Also, everyone agrees that nice girls do not have giant fake boobs like Brie. Which, I mean, if it were that easy, this show would be so easy for the men. But she is the only F girl who gets sent home, episode two. Casey sends home Jaina and seems like so sure that she's an F girl that when she says she's a nice girl, he's like touches his ear. He's like befuddled. He heard wrong. He's like, wait, what? Did you say nice girl? I was so ready for you to say F girl.
Casey is bad at this.
Yeah, I think just because she has like really good makeup and like seems physically confident, like sort of forward and flirtatious and made out with him. And he's like, ah, F girl. I got it. The problem with Casey is that he has identified his ultimate F girl and he doesn't want to send her home. So Benedict also has a rough time on his date in episode two because he asked Jan Danielle and he takes her to wax him. This was an own goal. He decided that he wanted to be waxed by a woman.
Or production was like, you should do this. And he's like, it'll be funny, sure.
And she's like, I'm not mad about it. One of my hobbies is actually torturing men. If he thinks this hurts, wait till the finale. I haven't even taken his money yet.
Jan Danielle is one of my favorite villains. I absolutely love her. I find her hilarious.
She's such a cartoon villain. Like, it's so obvious that she came in with all these like one-liners written. She is camping it up in her confessionals. I'm not saying that she's not really an F girl, but just that there is a lot going into her like crafting of the persona of being an F girl.
Yeah, and that makes it
camera.
Fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Luckily, the boys' F-girl radars do slightly improve in episode three. They send home three F-girls. Casey's first. Good job, Casey.
Finally got one. Kind of an easy one, I think. They had Anissa to send home, who has just been like a head mean girl in charge.
Head mean girl. And she also, which I didn't realize, is like a bottle girl in Vegas. Again, is the female equivalent of a club promoter.
Yeah, she's like, don't assume that I am an F-girl just because I am a bottle girl in Vegas. I am an F-girl, though, definitely. True to form. But she is one of the people who does a 180 and is like, Benedict, now I think you're hot, actually. Even though I was the main person saying that you were asexual and I didn't get your sex appeal, I just didn't think you were as dumb as CJ, which, gross. She's like, I'm asexual, you're asexual, let's be sexual together. Like, seriously, call me, you're hot.
Again, Anissa, Google asexuality.
She doesn't understand. But I'm glad that she sees it now. Like, we're Benedict fans, and I think everyone should be on board the Benedict train. So I was glad that she saw the light.
Yeah.
She's learned that funny men can also be sexy, and that's an important life lesson. You know, if you're gonna pick a partner,
because male comedians don't get enough girls.
You're right.
Real humanitarian crisis.
Alana gets sent home by CJ, And she is an F girl, but she says she would have split the money with him. She's like, I was ready to reform for the right guy and I would have done it for you.
There's definitely always a handful of women or men who are like assigned as the F people who, but they're just like, well, if I like the person, I'll split the money.
Yeah.
Like you want to be an hardcore F- gamers. Yeah. There's hardcore gamers. And then there are like the on the bubble F yeah. people.
You really want to go in as an F boy or F girl because then you have the option of keeping the money if you don't like the person at the end.
Right.
You can always not. You can always get with them if you want. Kim also tells Benedict that she thought he'd be an easy target. She just came in this episode and she went right for him. But she's like, I don't know. Then we talked and we actually had a really good conversation and I really liked you and you're great. And you deserve a good woman. Like my friend Jaslyn, who is so obsessed with you and you
she
guys,
says
I really
see it.
She's
in love with Benedict.
Yeah.
She says, my friend Jaslyn is in love with you.
Yeah.
And Jaslyn is like, yes, girl, thank you. Thank you for putting in a good word for me.
I know. Danielle's like, shut up. Benedict has had a really good series of eliminations. But I felt like this one okay for CJ too. Casey is getting torn up at these. Like the women are all just like, you're dumb. You're an F boy. You suck. I want you to get punished. No one's coming around at their eliminations and being like, I'm an F girl, but Casey, you seem great. And I wish you the best. That's just not happening. Something we haven't really talked about yet is that Mia is back. We touched on it earlier, but we didn't really discuss it. Mia,
I thought this was such an interesting choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that they love to do with F-Boy Island is bring back familiar faces. So they're doing that for F-Girl Island, Lovers and Liars, with Mia Imani Jones. She was one of the leads on season 2 of F-Boy Island. And she ended up, towards the end of the season, with just like a roster of 5 F-Boys. It was really rough for her.
Yeah.
She only had F-Boys to choose from. She ultimately ends up leaving with Peter Park, and he did choose to split the money with her, but they broke up, I think, like shortly after the show. And from what I remember, she was like, yeah, he just like didn't talk to me again, really.
Yeah. Not great. So she is one of the 3 new women who comes in episode 3. And the other two
Kim,
women,
yeah, Kim who
are
is
Kim and
going
Victoria.
For Kim, who is going for Benedict, of course, goes home, and then Victoria is going for Casey. So yeah. Mia is going for CJ. They
Victoria
tend to do that.
Gets brought up at elimination, but ultimately she is not sent home. Yeah, they each kind of go after a different person. Mia is the only repeat, which kind of surprised me. Like if they were going to do this, they love bringing back repeat men. But I guess they have a much smaller pool to draw from.
They have a much smaller pool. And I bet a lot of women were like, I don't want to go from being the lead to being a lesser cast member. I don't like, or I just, and I also have to imagine that she has come back as an F girl.
I would think so. I mean,
to get revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. She had like the Peter Park situation where he kind of blew her off after the show. But also she ended up with all F-boys at the end of the season. I would feel pretty fed up with F-boys if I were her. And I would be like, it's time for my heel turn. It's time to go full Joker.
Exactly.
I'm going to embrace
the dark
side.
It's a great storyline.
Yeah.
So I can see it. I can see it for her. And she's also someone who has a personality that really pops on TV. She's not afraid to get right into the mix. And she has the advantage of like, already being friends with Casey and Benedict.
Yeah.
Like, those are her boys.
True.
Like they went through season together.
Yeah. When they all walk in, Benedict goes, Mama Mia. And I was like, oh, right. They all hung out on F-Boy Island.
Yeah. They tend to all become pretty good friends after, especially when they don't date each other. Like,
right. So, of course, she has to go for
CJ.
CJ,
yeah, she couldn't
too,
go for
that
Benedict.
Reason also.
Yeah, no, she couldn't go for someone.
Not that I think that Casey really seems like, I mean, she really goes for more of the Peter Park type than like the wisecracking like Casey.
She likes a man with a more understated personality. Yeah. And CJ is kind of like that calm guy.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about CJ because he has been so like understated. He brings more of the calm, like mellow energy. But I did want to talk a little bit about how he's playing this season so far, because I find it fascinating, because he goes on every date and is like, I just want to really put her at ease by telling her about how I used to be an F-boy, but I came in really ready to finally learn what it means to like explore a connection with just one woman. And I did. And I fell in love with Daniela. And then she broke my heart. So you know what? Whether you're an F-girl or a nice girl, I understand you. Like, I know the journey that you're going to go on. I'm here with you. And the women are all just like, so you're saying that you're an F-boy? I don't understand. Are you still an F-boy? Is that what's going on here?
He's like, no, definitely not.
I think he's approaching it earnestly in a way that is confusing.
Yeah, I do think he's being earnest. I think his point is like, this show can like change you. People yeah. can change. Like, you don't have to be defined by the status of what yeah. you came in as. Like, let's just see if we connect. But the way he's expressing himself, like, he is the youngest of the bunch. I do think that shows sometimes.
Yeah. And also, like, he's an athlete, right? Like, that's been his kind of claim to female attention. Casey and Benedict are both the kind of guys who are like a little shrimpy or a little goofy. That's how they get the attention of women. They both cultivated these like wisecracking class clown personalities. CJ's just like, I'm tall and I play sports and women just flock to me. That's all I need. And it's an
and they are. They are flocking to
they
him.
They are. He literally tells one of the women, like, oh yeah, girls were always just falling at my feet. So I never really had to like invest like, in a
CJ,
relationship before.
You don't, but don't say that.
Yeah. She's like, oh, they were falling at your feet. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, I played sports. So yeah. But it's an odd fit for this show in a certain sense, because it is such a comedy forward show. And there is a lot of like the women are being strategic and they're getting into the sketch comedy of it all. And Casey and Benedict are really into wisecracking and comedy. And then CJ is just, they're being like, earnestly, like, I'm going to show the women what it means to travel the path. From being an F-boy to being a nice guy.
I do feel like they've done this, though, in the past with the women before, where they have cast, like, two very big personalities, sort of, like, hard-edged women, and one, like, really earnest, quieter one.
Absolutely.
I feel like that was the season one formula, for sure.
Yeah, like Sarah. But then it ended up seeming like Sarah was just, like, why is Sarah? I remember thinking Sarah didn't fit in well. Like, she seemed so gullible. She was so out of step with the tone of the show. CJ is not that out of step with the tone of the show. But it is such a contrast to the other storylines.
I agree.
And the women seem to be unsure what to make of it, too. They're more used to kind of the energy of the other two men. And when they're met with this kind of sincerity, they're like, is this real sincerity? Is this how he plays women? Why is he telling me all about how he's been an F-boy all his life? Is this a red flag? So that's kind of all we really get from CJ. And his arc is just that dynamic keeps playing out with his women. So I'm interested to see where that goes. I really like all of these leads, actually. I think it was well cast because they were some of my favorites from past seasons. So
I agree. I'm really enjoying this show. I think it's funny and fun to watch. And I hope it gets another season. Should we move on to Farmer Wants a Wife? We are nearing the end of this season of Farmer Wants a Wife, but we're not there yet.
It's like it's like an asymptote, you know? Like, we keep getting closer to the end, and yet we aren't ever going to reach the end. Like, you're like, oh, now I must be at the end, but no. It's one like, other no, micro step toward the end.
You're like, oh, only part one of Hometowns.
You're like, oh, well, we're at Hometowns. We're down to final two. The next episode must be the finale. No, it's Hometowns. Okay, well, it's Hometowns. No, it's Hometowns part one. Like, eventually one day, if we keep halving the distance to the finale, we will never reach the finale. Geometry is very important in this show, but we do get the first half of Hometowns and have some final solo dates in episode 9. They have narrowed their pools down to two ladies each. So let's talk a little bit about what happens before the Hometowns. Farmer Nathan is about to narrow his pool to two when Mackenzie leaves again. Mackenzie was previously the person he selected for his first solo date, and she had to leave before this date because of a family health situation. And now she has to leave again because her dad's condition has worsened, which is very sad, and she's very emotional about leaving. And Farmer Nathan says that he'll always wonder if she was the one, which I would hate to hear if I were engaged to Farmer Nathan after watching this. But fair enough. I mean, they didn't get a fair shot.
I do always find it a little bit hilarious that the primary way that women leave this show is self-elimination.
It's so true. They're just like, oh, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, Mackenzie had an extenuating, very sad circumstance. But yeah, just a lot of women in both seasons have just been like, I'm done now.
Yeah, I'd rather be doing something else with my one wild and precious life. Yeah, I remember that from the first season that we watched, thinking like, well, why would the farmers want to send these women home? They're getting all this help on the farm. They have six ladies there to greet them in the morning and make them pancakes. Like, why send anyone home? You're just reducing your overall staff. And the women have to be the ones to be like, I don't want to be doing free labor on this farm anymore. I will leave. A lot of turnover. Farmer Mitchell has his final date with Kiana, one of his final three, and it seems to go pretty well. But when it comes time to send someone home, he does send her home. And he's like, I didn't feel like you were pursuing me, and I also want to be pursued. And she's sort of like, oh, well, when you have other women here, it just doesn't feel right to be really going after you in that way. And he's like, well, that's what I am looking for. And one other woman, I think Kate, had like left him a little romantic note.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for. So Kiana leaves. And then we get into the Farmer Brandon of it all.
Oh my, joy is the gift that has kept on giving in this season. Oh my God. She, for anyone who has forgotten, is the one that told Brandon on their first date that she feels no empathy for people ever.
Yeah. And this was triggered, including for him. Like, this was triggered by him revealing that his mother abandoned him and his entire family. And she was like, yeah, I feel nothing about that.
And yet she's still there. She's still there. And Brandon just keeps giving her chance after chance after chance.
I think he's just like besotted with her like baby voice and her sausage curls and her lip gloss. Like, she is performing this dainty feminine vulnerability for him. Like, she ends up telling him that she feels no empathy because of a health condition that has made her own life very difficult. And then he gets to step in and be like, oh, that must have been so hard. He weeps. He's like, I really feel for you. And you can see that he appreciates getting to be the strong man who's like protecting her, who's like, oh, she's uncomfortable at a group dinner. I'm going to go after her. I'm going to feel her pain. I'm her protector.
What's interesting to me about Brandon is that on the one hand, he seems very enticed by traditional gender performances. Yes. And on the other hand, he seems to want a more egalitarian relationship than some of the other farmers.
Let's talk about this final date and the conversation they have.
Wild. I truly was riveted, actually, in this exchange.
Yeah, he basically is like, what do you think about being here on the farm? And she's like, well, I will want to stay home and have you be the provider. I want to be treated like a princess and treat my husband like a prince. And Brandon is like, love that. Amazing. For me, I'm a big believer in you work, you leave the house, you share all of those responsibilities. It's good to like have a life outside of the house. And she's like, no, I won't be doing that. And he's like, great, sounds good.
I was like, it doesn't, sounds like you guys have different ideas about what you want, Brandon. Like,
very different.
You said you want these basic things from a partner. She said, absolutely not. She also told you she literally lacks empathy. And you said, I'm a very emotional person who needs empathy. So
yeah,
this is a bad match.
Nothing about her could possibly better telegraph that she wants to stay home and be treated like a princess. Like, she is embodying every like physical cue and tell that that is her value system. That doesn't mean that like people who embody all those things always have that value system, but it can't come as that big of a surprise. It all goes together.
Exactly. So somehow she sticks around again.
Yeah. And I think this is actually when she decided she was going to leave.
Yeah.
He doesn't send her home. And I don't think he was going to.
No, he even says he was not going to, which makes me assume that he was going to send Grace home. Poor
Grace.
Instead, he goes to hometowns. Poor Grace. He's just clearly only has a friendship with her. And so Brandon is like gearing himself up to send one of them home. And Joy is like, excuse me, Brandon, I would like to leave. I've never had even an inkling of a romantic connection with you.
Yeah. She's like, I'm not in love, so I can't bring you home to meet my family. I just don't. I've never felt that for you. And he's like, okay, why did I spend all that time trying to fix our relationship after she told me that she had no empathy for me? I'm starting to regret some of those decisions that I made.
He's like, maybe Reba had a point about Joy. And it's starting to seem like she really did.
Yeah. I mean, wild to just be like, this whole time I haven't felt anything romantic for you. What
she said, it did not get romantic.
Yeah. I mean, I truly think a big part of it is just that he was like, oh, I would not be enthusiastic about you staying home and being treated like a princess. I would really prefer a wife who works. And you can just see her being like, oh, well, I guess I'll find someone who feels differently. Yeah. No, I mean, I think maybe she could have convinced him to have that structure of home life. But like, just go find a guy who wants a trad wife. There are plenty of them out there. She's like, why am I here? I'm a princess. I'm a princess in a leather jacket who is like repairing a giant field sprinkler in a leather jacket very badly. It's incredible to watch her do any farm work and imagine Brandon watching her and being like, this is going to work out. This is going to be amazing.
This is going to work so well.
But apparently,
my little princess, my little princess fixing the sprinkler. Episode 10 is just the first half of hometowns. We see each farmer with one go to the hometown of one of their final two and meet the family.
Yeah. And first, we actually get just the tail end of like the one-on-one dates. Farmer Ty has his final one-on-one date and it's with Melody. This is like the appetizer to the meal of her hometown date, because the big thing that we see happen on this date is that he asks her if she wants babies of her own. And she's like, oh, well, you have Lennon, your daughter, and I really like Lennon. I'd be involved in her life. I'd be a bonus mom. So I don't think so. But if I change my mind, you will give me a baby because I always get my way. Ha ha. And he seems quietly concerned, but he doesn't really say anything.
He only has two women left. He can't just send one of them home now. He's like, well, I guess I will be going to her hometown. But I think for both of us, that raised like several giant red flags.
Yeah.
If I change my mind, you have to.
Yeah. I always get what I want. So he heads to Yonkers to meet her family. And, you know, it's like city girl and country boy. Her family is like, oh, what's it like out in the middle of nowhere? Like, how do you get an Uber? And she's like, there are no Ubers. And they're like, so you'd have to like call a horse? Ha ha. And they ask about the kids question pretty directly. They're like, would you want to have more kids at this point in your life? And he's like, well, I'm not really sure. You know, I'm 42. Do I want to have the baby stage again? And like, you know, by the time the kid's grown up, how old will I be? So I don't really know if I want to start over. And they're like, well, Melody, do you really want kids of your own? And she gives the most incredible response to this.
I was in shock. She's like, well, I don't need kids right now because I would be a bonus mom to his daughter. And I really like her. We get along great. And that would be enough for right now.
Yeah.
So she seems to be suggesting that either obviously he will change his mind if she changes her mind, or that, I don't know, she will divorce him and find someone else.
Right. I was like, this almost seems like a big like reality TV fig leaf of believing in the conceit of the show being torn away, where she's like, obviously, we're not going to be like together for our lifetimes. That's ridiculous. This is just a show. I would be happy to not have babies for the duration of this showmance. But one day, of course, with my real husband, I will want kids, right? Like, that's kind of what it sounded like. I was like, what do you mean?
Absolutely insane thing to say out loud and repeat. Like, she says it to Ty and to her family. And I'm just thinking, Ty literally just said that his concern is that he's 42 and not sure at this moment right now, the youngest he will ever be again, that he wants to start over and have more kids.
This is not a Benjamin Button situation.
Yeah, she's like, surely when he's 55, that's the moment.
Yeah, this was such a, and she keeps emphasizing right now, like calling attention to it. And I'm like, that is, marriage is supposed to be kind of permanent. So
at the end of this date, I was like, so obviously Ty is not picking Melody. Cool.
I mean, if he does, he has no one to blame but himself. She's been very clear that eventually she probably wants kids by hook or by crook. And the fact that she doesn't want them right now is not resolving that question at all in a way that is favorable to him. So she also takes him ice skating. She's a really good figure skater.
She's incredible.
And I truly just don't understand how she doesn't have better options than Ty. Like, she's extremely beautiful.
Does.
She's talented. She's fun. She wants to marry this sort of like
city.
She lives in a major, I mean, Yonkers, but yeah. And like, she has like, she has this guy here who's like, doesn't seem to have much to say and is already deciding he doesn't want more kids, which she thinks she wants eventually. He lives in the middle of nowhere.
A decade older than her.
A decade older than her.
She can't get an Uber. Yeah, I'm like, girl.
I mean, he has the TV veneers, but like, is that a substitute for a guy who wants the same things as you and has a personality?
I would say no.
I would
say no. But maybe Melody disagrees. She's like, I do have better options, but I also did want to be on a television show.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like she wanted to be on a television show. Fair enough. Farmer Mitchell meets Sydney's family. Sydney is the construction worker who really wants to just like live that farm life because she loves physical work. She loves outside work. And Farmer Mitchell is always like, she's so perfect for, you know, the
labor,
life,
for
hard labor. But like, is this really the right woman for me? She lives in Sweetwater, New Jersey with her, or her family lives in Sweetwater, New Jersey, and so do her two sheep, backyard sheep.
She is, of course, 22 years old.
Yeah. She's like, she's great on the farm, but she's only 22. And I'm like, yeah, your other woman is 23, so thank God you've got that mature option.
Sydney is also the one that is, like, slightly less trad wifey. Like, she wants to have a relationship and travel before immediately pumping out babies.
Yeah. It's a problem.
I was like, yeah, I was like, I think Sydney's fucked. I think it's going to be Kate.
Yeah, which seems like a terrible decision to me, but I'm not Farmer Mitchell. I'm just a concerned citizen. Her dad interrogates Farmer Mitchell with ominous music underneath, asking questions like, why didn't your past relationships work out? And Farmer Mitchell doesn't know how to answer this. He's like, that is, you're really good at asking questions, like flop sweating.
Farmer Mitchell does not strike me as the sharpest tool in the shed. He's not really thinking on his feet kind of guy.
He doesn't seem prepared for questions of any kind.
He's like, I ask questions, but I don't. Yeah. I don't answer.
I ask
them.
Questions like, when will you have my children? And how do you feel about hard labor? But he eventually is like, oh, yeah, my ex didn't like being outside as much as me, I guess, and that sort of lifestyle.
They like tee him up. They're like, was it the outdoorsiness? And he's like,
yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tough definitely. Question, but definitely that. But then Farmer Mitchell gets her dad alone, and her dad is like, you know, Sydney and I, we love, you know, doing construction and being outside, going hunting. And Farmer Mitchell is like, oh, well, you can use my home as a hunting trip crash pad anytime you want. And her dad is like, great. I knew I liked you. Welcome to the family.
This felt so patriarchal, like early.
Yes.
Like in the evangelical era of The Bachelor, like that kind of vibe.
You know what it felt like to me? It felt like even back before the era of reality TV, it felt like that kind of like smoky back room, meeting where they're like, you have this nice hunting property. I have this construction business. Let's bring our resources together. Yes. I want to have access to that hunting property. You're saying I can have that access if my daughter marries you. Great. Let's shake on it.
Catherine called Birdie. That's what it's giving.
It is giving Catherine called Birdie. I want better for Sydney. Sydney is one of the only people I've ever seen on the show who truly does seem like she understands what farm life would mean and she desperately wants it.
Yeah, she's excited about it.
Yeah.
She is, I think, actually the only one out of these four that I'm like, she might be picked in the end.
Yeah. I could see it.
I feel like
it
was
out.
The underdogs. I feel like these hometowns were all the underdogs.
Yeah. Because next we have Farmer Brandon, who meets Grace's family in Wisconsin. The only thing I really remembered about this hometown is what happens when he arrives and she opens the door and says, "Hi, Farmer Brandon." And then she introduces him to her family as Farmer Brandon. And I was like, can you imagine being engaged and still being like, oh, this is my fiance, Farmer Brandon. I'm marrying Farmer Brandon. And then you're alone in a romantic moment. You're like, do I call him Farmer or Brandon? Like, or do I call him Farmer Brandon? Like, that's still who he is to her.
These two are acquaintances that are forced to peck on the lips sometimes.
And it also reminds me that the dynamic of the women being in their house is sort of like employer-employee. Like, it's almost like saying that he's her boss. Like, she's like, that's Farmer Brandon. Like, he's the farmer. He gives me assignments on the farm. Like, it's a little bit...
It's not good. It's not a romantic vibe.
Yeah.
Her family is concerned about her moving to the middle of nowhere. She, I think, grew up and her family all lives, like, in the Milwaukee area. So
yeah. Her dad says they are 19 minutes from downtown Milwaukee, which is the very precise calculation. He looked it up on Google Maps right before this. Their hometown is so boring. I don't remember anything else about it.
Not really anything else to say. We move right along to Farmer Nathan meeting Allie's parents and her best friend in Tucson, Arizona. What I really noticed is like the gorgeous mountains behind them at the outdoor restaurant that they were at for the hometown. I was just like, wow, what a beautiful view.
They found a table with a view for this conversation. I just noticed what felt like a lot of coded language during this. Like she kept being like, Nathan is respectful. He has morals. It's hard to find a guy like Nathan in Tucson. And I'm like, tell us more about what sets Nathan apart. Tell us more about his values.
Yeah, I definitely got that too. She's like, Florida is more my speed.
Yeah.
As a state.
And she steps away so that Nathan can talk to her family alone. And he tells them that she is a fantastic girl and has one heck of a personality.
I like that he was like, I won't say whether the personality is good, but it is present.
You can see that personality from a mile away. They ask whether he's going to break her heart and how he feels about the possibility of breaking someone's heart. And he's like, well, I really don't want to break anyone's heart. And her dad is like, amazing answer. I love your morals. They're so ready to be impressed by this guy. Say something that doesn't sound like the words of a clinically diagnosed sociopath and you're in. And after this, they have a moment together and she very coolly and unemotionally tells him that he has a great personality. So she would move to Florida for him. The way they talk about each other is very weird. It's like they were just given lists of qualities about each other, not even very specific qualities. And they just went through and circled the qualities that they like. They're like, oh, great personality. Yes, I like that. Morals, good. Yes. I like that you have morals and a personality. So I would definitely move to Florida for you. Like, it doesn't really sound like you know each other or have any sort of intimate relationship. But that's kind of been their vibe, is that, like, they had a friendship, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know if it's romantic. And then his family was like, we love Allie. You have to give her a chance.
I absolutely love this about this show, is that they're all so tepid. Like the men do not really get in there with the dates. They don't really go deep. So unlike The Bachelor, where you get to the final two and it's like this heart-wrenching decision that you believe someone might truly be torn about, they get to their final two and they're like, do we have a romantic connection? Is this person my employee?
Yeah.
Have we ever kissed? Who can say?
Yeah. And it's
I should decide whether to marry her.
It's a weird thing because it feels like where the conversations about their emotions are on The Bachelor are instead conversations about whether they're well suited for farm life. And yet they don't really seem to have a good sense of that either. You know, it's like they've been talking the whole time about whether they'd be good at farm life.
And I guess I should ask and make sure she really wants to be on the farm. They're like about to, you know, end the show. It's honestly, the show is really growing on me. I find it hilarious.
It does really make me think about the way that people on the American like frontier used to just like place advertisements in newspapers looking for like a sturdy bodied woman to be their wife and look after their three orphan children like that. That's what the dates feel like. It's like the date version of those.
No, it is It's seven brides for seven brothers, they never like fall in love. It's just the recruiting the good woman in town to come do the hard labor part.
Yeah, as we have discussed at length in our previous season coverage of this show, it still feels like that. But every episode, I'm just wowed anew by how they managed to capture that in a 2024 reality show.
Truly incredible. Should we give out our final roses for the week?
Yes, I'm going to give my final rose to Anissa's sudden realization that men can be funny and sexy on Lovers and Liars. Finally,
that's so nice for men.
Finally joining 95% of humanity and understanding that humor can be attractive. And I'm happy for her and for male comedians everywhere who, as you're saying, you know, they really need a break.
They need a boost from us.
Yeah, they need more hot women being willing to hook up with them. So
my final rose is going to go to Jenny J-Wow Farley. I met her in person. She's the nicest person I've met in a very long time. And interacting with her really just reminded me what a piece of art early Jersey Shore is. And I was like, you know what? They don't make them like that anymore.
They can't. Like, they changed the game.
Yeah.
They changed they changed society to a point that we can never have that again. Yeah. And that's power.
I want good things for Jenny, and she gets my final rose.
On that note, that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Talon Stradley. Tatiana Kniez-Smith is our production assistant. Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv and our art is by Celine Chang.
If you like the show, please follow us, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. And of course, tell all of your friends about our show.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com.
You can also find us on TikTok at Love to See It Pod and Instagram at clareandemmapod. And you can find our newsletter rich text on Substack at clareandemma.substack.com. I'm also on social media at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Bros. We'll be back next week. Can you keep up?
Stitcher.